Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm Jim Dolan. I'm your host. Here briefly in between the programs to tell you what's on. That's what a host's supposed to do, so that's what I'm going to do right now. We're starting off with some comedy here, and actually two-fisted action and comedy in the form of Sam Spade Detectives. He's kind of a funny guy, but also knows when to give you a punch in the belly when you need one, huh? This program is called The Civic Pride Caper from 1951.
The National Broadcasting Company presents The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective.
Sam Spade Detective Agency?
Me, sweetheart.
Oh, you.
What's the matter now?
Oh, nothing. You just up and leave and don't say where you're going. And I'm only your secretary and I'm the last one to know about it. And everybody else in town knows more than I do. And I wasn't here.
Enough. Wait a minute. How did everybody in town know about it?
Well, it was in the newspapers, that's all. In the society column, no less.
Really? Well, imagine that.
Flora Belle Frolic's column.
Flora Belle.
Mr. Spade, the notorious private detective, is vacationing at Westover as a guest of a promising young architect, Garrett Welch.
Notorious, yeah. Well, at least they spell my name right.
I suppose you had a great time.
Well, it was exciting.
What did you do?
Just talked over old times, Eph. Did a little hunting, little shooting.
Did you bag anything?
Eph, watch your language.
Bam.
I see you're shocked. Well, so was I. However, if you have nothing to do, hang around the office, and I will be down with several pages from my diary telling about the whole affair. I've titled them The Civic Pride Caper.
For NBC, William Spear, radio's outstanding producer, director of mystery and crime drama, brings you the greatest private detective of them all, starring Stephen Dunn in The Adventures of Sam Spade.
Well, I thought you'd gone chicken and run out on me. You're part of this organization. You're going to bear the bitter with the sweet, along with the rest of us.
I know, but I always seem to get the bitter.
Hmm?
Friday's when the sweet should be given out.
Don't quibble. This is a nasty job we have here. We might just as well sit down and get it over with. You care for a drink? You might need it.
No, thanks. I don't need false bravery.
Lucky you. Hell, are you ready?
No, but we might as well start.
Well, you know best. Date, fill it in to Garrett Welch, room 212, Fairchild Building, Westover, California. From Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Subject, the Civic Pride Caper. Dear Garrett, I'd never been in Westover before, and I found it, on the surface at least, an attractive, bustling little city. The streets were clean, and the girls were sun-kissed and friendly. Add to that the $150 you sent me by mail, and you can imagine with what pleasant feelings I arrived. I found the Fairchild Building easily enough, and room 212, well, I couldn't miss it. There were sounds of vigorous activity coming out through the transom. And when I opened the door, two men were engaged in a fight. One was big and one was little. I didn't know which one was my client, so I automatically reached for the big guy.
Go on me. What do you think you're doing?
What's it all about?
Oh, ask him, he'll tell you.
All right, what's the story?
I was being foully and unreasonably attacked by this misguided citizen.
I ought to kill you. That's what I ought to do. That's what everybody ought to do.
Hold still. Why?
Oh, let him go. Beat it, Carson. Wait until you can catch me alone in some dark alley.
Don't think I won't. Don't you think I won't.
I'm sure you will.
I'm going to catch you every place and every time I can.
Well, I take it your name is Garrett Welch.
It is. And I want to thank you, friend.
Nothing.
You rescued me from a rather unhappy breeding.
And your mouth is kind of cut up.
Huh? Oh, there's nothing. Nothing I can't take care of. Drink?
I'll never touch you.
Oh.
You.
You might have noticed I've already had a few drinks today. Well, it helps me forget. And it also keeps me from thinking. There you are.
No, thanks. My name is Spade. Why did you send for me? Bodyguard?
No. Let them have their fun. I don't mind. Maybe I even deserve it.
Look, you're paying for my time. Why don't we get with it, huh?
Hmm? Oh, sure. Why not?
Good.
Come over here to the window. Yeah. Look out there.
Where?
The far corner.
Oh, you mean that building?
Pile of rubbish is a better description.
Well, what happened? Fire?
No. It just collapsed one night. Last week.
Oh.
There were more than 3,000 people in it at the time. 5 of them were killed. I don't know how many injured.
Well, that's too bad. How did it happen?
It just collapsed. Another drink?
No, thanks.
Pardon me? It was a municipal auditorium built to honor the war dead. It cost over $1 million. I was the architect.
Oh.
Yeah. I was picked by the townspeople for the singular honor of designing the Fond Memorial. Well, now they have something to remember.
What'd you do wrong?
Nothing. Nothing. Somebody cheated in the building of it. Somebody didn't follow my plans. I don't know who it is. I don't know who it was. Or just where to place the blame. So, you're a private investigator? What can you do?
Get you some black coffee and ask you some questions. He gave me a list of everybody in town who had something to do with the building. First off, I called on a man named Howard Kessley, whose construction company had the contract for erecting the auditorium. Kessley lived in an elegant house on a well-guarded estate. And after they took my gun away from me, they let me in. I waited in a room tastefully decorated with original oil paintings and oriental rugs. And eventually, a football hero-type man walked in.
You from the insurance company?
No, I'm a private detective, Sam Spade.
Who are you working for?
Garrett Welch.
Huh. That's a laugh.
Funny.
Well, what do you want?
Look, you built that auditorium. Have you any idea why it fell down?
Maybe it just got tired. I don't know.
Aren't you interested?
We're looking into it now.
Who's we?
My company engineers. That Garrett Welch. An architect. You should have had somebody who knew what he was doing.
Do you have any copies of the building specifications that I might look at?
Sure. Sure, I got nothing to hide. You can go back and tell Garrett Welch that the best thing he can do is get out of town. Or somebody tries to knock him off and succeed. Here. Here's a copy of the plans. Look at it all you want. You'll find I did what I was supposed to do.
I got my gun back from the guards and left with the building specifications tucked under my arm. They didn't mean a thing to me, of course. I'd only asked for them to see whether he'd refuse to show them. But out of curiosity, I enrolled them just for a look before dumping them into the ash can. And I noticed something. The last page was signed and approved by the city building inspector, a man named Albert Mitchell.
Well? Well. I don't usually receive callers at this hour, but you're a little better looking than the ordinary caller. Come in.
She was slim and auburn-haired and wore an insolent smile that was interesting, and a clinging silk thing that was interesting. She looked me up and down, and she took so long at it.
Okay. Okay, what is it? Magazines?
I...
The gas meter? Or did you just lose your way?
I'd like to talk to Albert Mitchell.
Oh, he's a dull conversationalist. You wouldn't have any fun.
Well, I wasn't exactly looking for laughs, Mrs. You are Mrs. Mitchell?
More or less. Right now, less. Soda or water?
What?
In your drink.
Oh, thanks, but I took the pledge last Halloween.
What did you want to talk to Al about?
Well, what else? The auditorium that collapsed.
Well, he stepped out for a while. Why don't we just make ourselves comfortable?
You have a standard answer when I'm on duty. Thanks anyway.
Duty? You a cop? I've never seen you around this town before.
Private type investigator. Sam Spade.
My name's Kitty. You don't have to worry about Al busting in on us. I don't think he'll be back this week.
That's what I thought, you holding open house and all. What's the matter? The pressure got too heavy for him?
Look, Sam, they had a hearing a couple of days ago. It was all decided. Nobody was to blame. I think Al went fishing or something.
Where is he?
How should I know? I'm only his wife.
Well, you know what they say about a man who runs.
Yeah, so why don't you stick around? You don't look like a coward to me.
Well, when it comes to redheads, I really am. So long, Kitty.
But...
Oh, by the way, if Al does ever show up, tell him I took a room at the Embassy Hotel. I'd like him to call me.
I won't tell him a thing. Come back here, you coward. Hey, Sam!
I went down to the wreckage of the auditorium. It was late, and the streets were quiet and deserted. I walked through the twisted shell of the building, striking matches and looking around. I didn't know what I was looking for, but apparently I wasn't the only one visiting the scene of the crime. I was standing just inside the gutted remains of what was once the lobby when it happened. Gunfire cut loose at the back of the building. I ran toward the noise, and when I turned the back corner, I saw a cloud of plaster dust where the shots had apparently been fired. There were no people or cars in sight, but on the sidewalk, on hands and knees, was a man.
Rats. Rats. Double-crossing dirty rats. Save me. Don't let me die. Kitty.
He grabbed my legs and tried to pull himself up. His face was a gargoyle of pain. I reached down to help him, but he slipped back to the sidewalk, dead. Four bullets had gone through his back. A billfold fell out of his pocket. It was loaded with identification, and everything said Albert Mitchell, age 40. Occupation, building inspector.
You are listening to the weekly adventure of radio's most famous detective, Sam Spade. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. This Sunday, Theater Guild on the Air presents an exciting one-hour adaptation of the Broadway stage comedy Light Up the Sky. Starring in this Theater Guild production are Joan Bennett, Sam Levine, and Thelma Ritter. And on Sunday, you're invited to another hour and a half broadcast of The Big Show, starring Eddie Arnold, Jack Carson, Eddie Cantor, Olivia de Havilland, Martha Ray, Meredith Wilson, and many more. Your MC, of course, is the glamorous and unpredictable Tallulah. And now back to the Civic Pride caper, tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
A good many other people had heard the sound of Albert Mitchell's assassination, and before long a crowd had gathered. Among them were several minions of the law. They took two people in tow, the dead Mitchell and the live Spade. The Westover Police Department had themselves a fine time over me. It seems I was hired out-of-town killer and therefore eligible to be questioned all night. They worked hard at it, but in the morning they had to admit defeat and release me. I think they only did it because they didn't want to pay for my breakfast. By then I was pretty mad, and at 10 o'clock I walked into the mayor's office and demanded an interview. I got it.
The whole thing, Mr. Spade, was regrettable. But after all, you are a stranger here. And when a man is killed and someone happens to be in on the scene, questions have to be asked.
Your Honor, I'll let it pass in the interests of law enforcement.
Good. Our report on you from San Francisco gives you quite a reputation as an investigator. Do you have any theories that might help us in this murder of Mitchell?
Well, I could hazard an expert guess that it's tied in with the building scandal, the auditorium collapse. By the way, what's being done officially to fix the blame for that?
The city council held its investigation of the unfortunate affair last week, and as far as we can determine, no one is directly responsible.
No one? Oh, come, Your Honor.
Are you questioning our civic procedure? Oh, well, maybe you're right. Maybe we've been too easygoing. We're all neighbors here.
Yes, I'm
friends.
Conducting an investigation for a client who certainly has a right to know what's going on insofar as a good many citizens seem to feel he's to blame.
Oh, yes, Mr. Welch. Well, he's not to blame. No one is. You must pardon my abruptness, Mr. Spade, but the events of the past week have been a little
yes,
more
yes,
than...
Yes, I know. Tell me, Albert Mitchell, as building inspector, must have approved the building of the auditorium. Now, was he a reliable man?
Yes. Wait a minute. You don't think...
I think he was killed by somebody who wanted him to keep his mouth shut. Now, what about the contractor, Howard Kesley?
Kesley? Born here. Brought up here. He's built about one-third of the structures in Westover.
Uh-huh.
Every one of them, except the auditorium, is standing today. No, I don't think you can build up a case...
I'm just examining the possibilities, Your Honor. You have to begin with the people who had something to gain from this thing. Where there's graft, there might be murder. Where are the purchase orders for the materials used in this building?
That was the first question I asked. I was told they were destroyed with all the other useless paperwork that accumulated from the construction job.
Oh, great, great. That certainly makes it convenient for somebody.
Mr. Spade, I don't wish to... And I can't believe, as you apparently do, that this town's population is crooked and rotten. So if I come across any information that will help clear the good name of Garrett Welsh, you can be sure that I'll be happy to bring it to your attention. Until then, I bid you good day, sir.
I could understand Mayor Sullivan's desire to protect the fair name of his city, but I had to take a meaner view of at least one Westover citizen. I found out where Albert Mitchell did his banking, and misrepresenting myself as a collection agent, pried into his holdings.
Let me see now, Mr. Humboldt. I really shouldn't give out this kind of information, but in your case, when you have a claim against the estate, I'd... Oh, yes, yes, here it is. He has $300 in his account, that's all.
What kind of deposits did he make?
Oh, just paychecks, mostly. He was a $7,500-a-year man. Every Friday, he deposited $150.
Any deposits larger at any time?
Oh, yes. Four deposits of $5,000 each in the past year.
Well, what do you know?
As I recall Mr. Mitchell saying, there were payments from the estate he inherited.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Carter. You'll hear from my company soon, I'm sure.
Yes. Oh, what was the name of your company again, for my records?
Amalgamated Whistle.
Oh, yes.
Preferred.
Oh, yes, of course.
That inheritance gag was right out of the Kefauver investigation. An inheritance is paid in a lump sum, practically never in four payments of $5,000 each. I didn't know whether Mrs. Mitchell was receiving, but I decided to find out. When I knocked at her door, all was quiet inside, but a second after my knock, there was a burst of sorrow. When she came to the door, there were two rather impossible-sized tears flowing down her face. For widow's weeds, she wore a black dress, tight, satin, and low-cut.
Oh, Mr. Spade, I'm in no mood for talking now.
Oh, just for a moment, may I come in?
I guess so. I'm really kind of alone and lost. What is it you want?
I must apologize for intruding on your bereavement, Mrs. Mitchell. I'm not usually as callous.
Oh, that's all right. But I'm not sure I can help you any. I'm so broken up.
What is it, camphor?
What?
Whatever you use to make those tears.
All right, so I can't really cry. I never have, but it's expected of me.
Yeah, all right. In that case, I sympathize with you.
What do you want?
Kitty, your dear departed husband made $7,500 a year and deposited $20,000 in 8 months. Now, what about it?
I don't know anything about his money. All I know is that the bank told me he had only $300 left.
What'd he do with it?
He spent it on other women.
Oh, I see. So the artificial tears do make sense, I guess.
No. No, you don't understand. It's not that simple. It's funny, Sam, because I really mean it. Oh, I know how stupid I look in these clothes. And I did use camphor on my eyes because I wanted to cry. I wanted to cry for all the good days and the good years Al and I had. But the bad years kept getting in between, and I couldn't do it.
I like you better all the time, Kitty. I knew you were real pretty. Now it turns out you're pretty real.
I really loved him, and he loved me. But we kicked it away because we both wanted more excitement than this town or his salary could give us. There was no place to go. We just didn't get along. He was out spending his money on other women, being a big shot. I can't blame him, though. I helped make him do it.
What about the money? He got it for falsifying the auditorium inspection papers, didn't he?
Well, he didn't get it for inventing television.
Who paid him?
Sam, don't ask me anymore.
Well, you do know where the $20,000 came from, don't you, Kitty?
Don't, Sam. I'm scared.
You know what you ought to do? You ought to come back to San Francisco with me. Let me help you get a job there. You can make a fresh start.
You're not kidding.
I give you my word.
I ought to have my head examined for trusting you, but I'm going to do it. Al got that money from the Central Cement Company for, quote, an advisory capacity, unquote. Mm-hmm. You know who owns the Central Cement Company?
Howard Kessler?
Warm, but not quite. His brother. Last night when Al showed up in town, he was gunning for trouble.
Why?
He said they were going to make a fall guy out of him and that he wasn't going to take the blame for anybody. That's what he said. Mm-hmm. But I think he ran out of money and wanted to make a touch in exchange for disappearing again, for good.
And you think Kesley shot him or his brother?
I can't think, and I don't know anything else. Now, do I get to San Francisco?
I'll be back for you,
Kate. All right, but make it fast. And don't leave me here, because if anything happens to me, Sam, it'll be on your conscience.
She walked to the door with me and kissed me on the cheek, and it was nice. No more than that. It was nice. Next stop, the Central Cement Company offices. Statement of Howard Kessler's brother, Ralph.
I'll explain it to you in simple terms. We supplied cement for a lot of buildings in this part of the country. When you want to build something, you submit a bid. When you want to know what kind of a bid to submit, you ask an expert. Mitchell was our expert, and we didn't expect him to work for nothing.
You mean Mitchell tipped you off as to what other firms were bidding?
Well, call it anything you want. It's done all the time.
I found Garrett Welsh, my architect client, slumped over his desk, much the worse for drink, and it took a good half hour with coffee and wet cloths to bring him around to something resembling normal.
I was proud of that building, Mr. Spade. As proud once as I am ashamed of it now. I spent 4 years at a prominent American college and 2 years apprenticeship with a great architect to prepare myself to come back here and make this the most beautiful city in the West.
Well, you must have watched them build it. What went wrong?
That's the point. I wasn't here. They sent me to Chicago to study. And I bid for it. What they really wanted was for me to be out of the way.
Who are they?
The city council. Oh, why bother? Just tell me how much I owe you and we'll just forget it. Nobody's going to indict anybody for anything.
Well, somebody's responsible for the building and for Mitchell's murder, and we'll find him.
We?
Yeah. If you'll lay off that bottle for a while and work with me, maybe we can do it.
All right. All right. No more booze. I'll stop feeling sorry for myself and start getting mad. Hey, where are you going?
I'm going to start at the top. I'm going to try to get the mayor to help.
You say you've turned up something, Mr. Spade?
A lot of something, Your Honor. I ferreted out copies of the purchase orders for the materials used in that building. They were generally inferior and below the quality required by sound engineering and the law.
Oh, you can't mean it.
I do. You can inform your district attorney that in a matter of 2 or 3 days, I will move for an indictment of several people in this community for gross criminal negligence. Now, I want to know whether or not I'll have your full cooperation.
There's no question of that. I'll cooperate with you fully to prosecute
any... Thank you, Your Honor, and good day.
Just a minute.
Yeah?
About Howard Kessler.
What about him?
Do you still consider that he is subject to suspicion?
The families of the 5 people who died in the ruins would think anybody who was concerned in the building project were subject to suspicion, Your Honor.
Mr. Spade, you know about politics. Certain people contributed campaign funds and got me votes.
Kessler?
I've been in a difficult position. I've been weak, perhaps. Maybe I haven't wanted to look too closely at certain possibilities in this horrible affair. But I promise you I won't stop now. It doesn't matter what happens. My first duty is to the citizens of this town.
Well said, Your Honor. Just tell the same thing to the other members of the city council. Tell them that if I kick the lid off this garbage can, it's going to make Westover smell pretty bad.
You'll hear from me, Mr. Spade. I guarantee you.
In the course of the next 2 hours, I told the same story to the newspaper, the police, a couple of soda jerks, a waitress, and almost anybody else who would listen. And before the day was out, the results started coming in. Garrett Welch's office and my room at the Embassy Hotel were both ransacked. Somebody started shadowing me, and I had a mysterious phone call offering me money to get out of town. I refused and hung up. During that day, I stayed mostly out in the open in conspicuous parts of town. But when night fell, I knew I'd need to watch my step. Garrett Welch and I holed up in his office with the door locked and my gun out on the desk. Around 11, we got a little action.
Welch speaking. Yeah? Yeah, okay. It's for you, Spade.
Hello?
Sam, this is Kitty Mitchell. I'm in trouble.
What kind?
3 men were just here. They said I gave you some purchase orders. I don't know anything about them, but they said if I didn't get them back from you by midnight, they'd kill me.
Who were they?
I don't know. Just men. If you've got them, give them to me, Sam. I don't want to die.
Look, hang up. Call the police and ask them for protection.
Sam, I'm afraid. Why don't you give me the papers?
Get in a taxi cab and come up to Garrett Welsh's office. We'll talk it over.
I'm afraid to do that.
Well, you'll have to. I can't leave here. I'm waiting for somebody.
Who?
I'm not sure yet. Somebody threatened Mitchell's wife. She's coming up here.
Well, I think we have enough to do taking care of ourselves. Who's that?
Go on, you answer it. Then step to one side. I'll keep you covered.
Okay.
Don't make one wrong move.
I'm not going to, Spade. I came here to talk.
Kessley?
Yes.
Who's with you, Kessley?
Nobody. I'm alone and unarmed.
Come in.
I'm watching you from behind, Kessley.
I know it. I just came to talk.
All right, talk.
Spade, you allegedly have information as to why the auditorium collapsed, killing five people.
Suppose I do.
Well, I came to make a deal with you.
We're not making deals.
I think you'll like this one. I'll give you all the positive information you want for one thing.
Namely?
A 48-hour head start out of town.
Why should we give you that?
Because nobody, least of all myself, thought the building would collapse. It's true I used inferior materials, but I had to.
What does that mean?
There's a man in this town.
The door was suddenly kicked wide and a blaze of bullets flew across the room. Kessley's mouth opened in shock, his knees buckled, and he pitched forward, bouncing off the desk to the floor. A tall, silver-haired gentleman was behind the gun. That caught him shoulder high, spun him around. The gun fell out of his hand, and Welsh and I were on him in a second.
All right, all right. I've done all I'm going to do. I'm hurt. I'm wounded.
Well, Your Honor, you're better off than Kessley.
Kessley didn't want to do it. But I had something on his brother and told him I'd send him to jail. We saved $100,000 on the cheap supplies we used in that building.
Yeah, when I showed up, Kessley was afraid he was going to take the rap alone. He was afraid he'd end up like Albert Mitchell, right?
Yes, yes, I killed Mitchell. He wanted more money.
You killed him, you...
Kitty, don't put it down! She had come in while we were talking and picked up the gun Mayor Sullivan had dropped. Her one shot hit him in the chest. Then she let the gun slip through her fingers and just stood there. Then you know what? She cried. Real tears. Period. End of report.
Sam, what an awful tragedy.
It was indeed, Eff. Of course, in a few minutes, the place was full of police and we turned her over.
Well, what do you think's going to happen to her, Sam?
I'd rather not think about that, Effie. Now, how about typing it up?
Three chimes mean good times on NBC. There's fun this Sunday with two of your favorite families, the Blandings and the Harrises. Mr. and Mrs. Blanding stars Cary Grant and Betsy Drake in the title roles as the owners of the famous Dream House. And the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show brings you Phil and Alice with more of their merry antics, plus Frankie Remley, Brother William, and the entire cast. You're invited this Sunday.
Here it is, Sam. All typed up.
Well, I'll take your word for it. I'm not going to read it again.
Why did the mayor come in and shoot the building contractor in front of witnesses? Why, he threw away everything you worked so hard to steal. Why?
That is a good question. If I... Oh, saved by the knock. Come in.
Is this Sam Spade's office?
It is?
I'm Lyle Rooks.
You expect me to believe that?
I'm Western editor of Radio Television Mirror Magazine.
Well, you know best.
I just wanted to tell you that in our annual awards poll, nationwide, the American listeners have chosen Steve Dunn as their favorite detective.
Steve Dunn, not me?
Be quiet, Sam.
So here, sir, is your citation. You may want to frame it. Put it up in your office.
Why?
Thank you. Goodbye.
Well, Steve Dunn, who
is... He's the man to place you on the radio, Sam. Oh, he's handsome.
Well, do you love him better than you love me when I'm burning up with passion for you?
Are you really burning up, Sam?
Well, I'm beginning to smolder a little. Come here and tell me about love.
Oh, well, I don't know much about it, Sam. Not as much as I'd like to know.
Well, I'm sorry. Sorry, I don't have a teacher's permit for the state of California.
Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade are produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Stephen Dunn. Lorene Tuttle is Effie. Also in the cast were Shirley Mitchell, Jack Crucian, Sidney Miller, Paul Fries, Herb Rawlinson, and Lou Merrill. Script for tonight's adventure by John Michael Hayes. Musical scoring by Lud Gluskin, conducted by Robert Armbruster. Join us again next week, same time, for another adventure with Sam Spade. Tomorrow, enjoy the exciting Man Called X on NBC.
Now we're going to take up the comedy of Jack Benny. And Jack is robbed of Ronald Colman's Oscar. This is from 1948.
The Jack Benny Program, presented by Lucky Strike. Lucky Strike and Lucky Strike alone offers you important evidence gathered in the tobacco country by the world-famous Crosley Poll. This evidence reveals the smoking preference of auctioneers, buyers, and warehousemen, the men who really know tobacco. Here's what the Crosley Poll found.
For their own personal smoking enjoyment, independent tobacco experts again name Lucky Strike first choice. Lucky Strike first choice over any other brand.
These experts know their business. Their overwhelming preference for Lucky Strike, we believe, has a direct relationship to the quality tobacco we purchase for Lucky's and to the real, deep-down smoking enjoyment you may expect from fine tobacco. And when these veteran tobacco experts name Lucky Strike first choice for their own personal smoking enjoyment, then you know.
LSMFT. LSMFT.
Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. And fine tobacco is what counts in a cigarette. So smoke the smoke tobacco expert smokes Lucky Strike. Remember,
independent tobacco experts again name Lucky Strike first choice. Lucky Strike first choice over any other brand.
The Lucky Strike Program, starring Jack Benny, with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. And now, let's go out to Jack Benny's house in Beverly Hills, where we find... must be something wrong here. Oh, that's what it says. Where we find Jack down on his knees scrubbing the kitchen floor.
I didn't know a floor could get this dirty. Well, anyway, the floor's scrubbed. What a job. Now, let's see, what else is on that list of things I have to do? Oh, yes, I've already dusted the bedroom, turned the mattresses, changed the linen on the bed, did the dishes, washed the... Hello?
Hello, Mr. Berry, this is Rochester. I just finished 18 holes of golf.
Oh, you did, eh?
Yeah. Did you wash the living room windows?
Yes, yes.
Did you put out the garbage?
It's out, it's out.
Did you scrub the kitchen floor?
I just did that.
Good. When will dinner be ready?
7 o'clock, and it's the last time I'll play gin rummy with you. Goodbye. One game of gin rummy, and I have to do all the housework. I got to do it tomorrow, too. He blitzed me. Gosh, am I tired. Scrubbing that floor was quite a job. When I take my bubble bath tonight, I mustn't forget to put some Jergens on my knees. Well, let's see. Now, before I take off this apron and dust cap, I better... Oh, there's the door buzzer.
Oh, I beg your pardon, miss, but I guess I have the wrong...
Dennis, it's me.
Oh, yes. Gee, you look cute in that apron.
I'm not trying to look cute. I was down scrubbing the floor, and it wasn't easy. I'll pull up my pants leg and show you. There, look at my knees. Now, cut that out! Then come in.
All right, but there's a package addressed to you lying out on the walk.
There is? Why don't they deliver those things to the door? I'll go out and get it. Dennis!
It wasn't me. It was that man across the street.
What?
You forgot to roll down your pants leg.
Oh, yes. They are kind of nice, aren't they? If I can get a little more tan, I can go without stocking. Oh, well. A pretty girl is like a melody. Dum, dum, bum, bum, bum. Here, kid, hold the package while I get my glasses. Dennis, what are you doing?
I opened the package. Gee, look at the picture script from Warner Brothers.
Well, thank goodness. I've been waiting for it all week.
And there's a letter with it from Harry Warner.
A letter from Harry Warner? What does he say?
He says, "Dear Jack, enclosed fine script and contract for your next picture as agreed upon. And it's the last time I'll play gin rummy with you." What does that mean, Mr. Benny?
Nothing, nothing. Now, kid, what'd you drop over for?
Well, Mr. Benny, I want to ask you something very personal.
Personal? What is it?
Just a second while I close the door.
All right, kid, what is it?
Is anybody else at home?
No, no, we're all alone. What is it you want to know?
Wait till I close the window.
All right, Dennis, all right. What is it?
Mr. Benny.
Yes?
Are you the walking man?
Dennis. Dennis, come here a minute.
Huh?
Let me feel your head. No, the other one. Now, look, kid, I want to go over this script that Warner Brothers sent me. So excuse me a minute. It's a Western. Good title, too. Bad Man of Bullock's Basement. Scene one. Fade in on ranch house. As the moon comes up in the east, the sagebrush casts weird shadows across Black Buzzard Gulch.
Before you get too interested in that script, wouldn't you like to hear the song I prepared for the program?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Go ahead. Write a sing, kid. I can listen to you and read at the same time.
Okay.
The horses are bedded down for the night when suddenly a shot is heard in the distance. There, you vomit. One more sound out of you, and I'll thrash you within an inch of your life.
But gee, I sang as good as I could.
Huh? Oh, pardon me, kid. While you were singing, I was reading the script.
Oh.
It's a Western, you know, and I guess I got carried away.
I know. You rode me piggyback through the last half of the chorus.
I'm sorry, kid.
Well, then get off.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, kid, your pockets make nice stirrups there. Anyway, this is the best story. Somebody came in. Rochester, is that you coming back?
It ain't General MacArthur.
Well, it's about time.
Hey, what's that you're reading, boss?
It's a script from Warner Brothers, and it looks great. Gee, if I'd have made this picture last year, I would have won the Academy Award instead of Ronald Coleman.
If you'd have made it in that dust cap and apron, you'd have won it instead of Loretta Young.
Never mind.
You know, boss, I wish you would win an Academy Award sometime. I've never seen an Oscar.
You haven't? Well, Rochester, your wish may come true, because if I make this picture, I'm a cinch to win it.
And maybe if you had someone with you in a supporting role, it might help.
Well, a good supporting actor does add something. Who did you have in mind, Dennis?
Ronald Coleman.
Ronald in my picture? Say, that's a pretty good idea. I mean, now that he won the award, he certainly is worthy of the opportunity. You know, I may go next door and speak to Mr. Coleman about it. I wonder if he's home.
Where are you, Ronnie?
In the library, Benita. You know, maybe I haven't told you this before, but it's very nice being here, alone together, away from the crowd.
Ronnie, stop talking to that Oscar and pay some attention to me.
I'm sorry, dear.
Ah, but you were thrilled winning it, weren't you?
Well, you know, it's hard to describe exactly how it feels. There I sat in the Shrine Auditorium, one person among an audience of 6,200 people, and then they called my name. As I walked to the stage, my entire career flashed before my eyes. From the time I made my first appearance in London many years ago, as a banjo player.
Well, I didn't know you ever played the banjo.
Oh, yes, yes. I plunked a mean fling. I used to be billed as the London Eddie Peabody. And then I packed my belongings, took my banjo along, and came to America. Here I was billed as England's answer to Frank Remley. Yes, yes, those were the things I kept thinking of during the Academy ceremonies. And I've no actual recollection of them presenting me with the Oscar.
Well, you certainly were the most excited person on the stage.
Aye, excited. Was it noticeable?
Oh, very. Especially when you went over to congratulate the other award winners.
Why, what did I do?
You slapped Loretta Young on the back and kissed Daryl Zanuck.
No.
Yes. And you greeted everyone. You even shook hands with Jack Benny.
Well, I didn't mean to. He stuck his arm through Gregory Peck's sleeve. Anyway, darling, I wish we could have just one evening at home without mentioning Jack Benny.
Oh, darling, why do you dislike him so? He means well, and he does try to be helpful. Why, only this morning he was walking around our yard helping our gardener.
He wasn't helping. He was looking for Easter eggs. Wearing that bunny suit, yes. I aimed a kick and just missed his cottontail. Why we moved next door to him, I'll never know.
Ah, but we have such a beautiful home.
Yes, but other people have beautiful homes, too. They can look out of their windows and see rolling green hills. Or the lights of the city spread out like a carpet of jewels. Or the golden sun setting on the Pacific. I look out of my window and see Jack Benny luxing his undies.
You saw yesterday were yours.
Oh, yes. Yes, well, he did them rather well. But why doesn't he stick to the laundry business instead of going on the radio? Surrounding himself with all those characters.
Oh, darling. Mary Livingston's such a nice girl.
Oh, I don't mean Mary. I'm talking about the others. Take that Phil Harris fellow. Well, the way he conducted himself at the party after the Academy Awards.
Oh, I didn't see him there.
Well, very few people did. As soon as he arrived, he got a bottle, went off in a corner, and just sat there.
Wasn't he lonely?
Lonely, but loaded. You know, sometimes I say... Oh, Benita, look. Look out this window. Isn't that Phil Harris now?
Where?
He's walking towards Benny's house.
Oh, this is strange. I thought he was younger than that. He's carrying a cane.
No, darling. That's a pool cue. But just look at the way he swaggers when he walks.
I wonder if I can reach the doorbell from out here on the sidewalk. Better chalk up first.
Boss, there's nobody here but a long finger.
Hey, it's me, Rod.
Oh, hello, Phil.
Hiya, Jackson. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Phil.
Phil, what's the idea of walking through the streets with a pool cue?
I wanna. See what's engraved on the handle?
Where?
Right there.
This pool cue was presented to Phil Harris for outstanding achievement in furthering the art of snooker. Well, isn't that wonderful, winning a pool cue?
Yeah, and if I hadn't scratched my last shot, I would have won the engraved cuspidor.
Oh, that's a shame.
Sure it is. I already bought a doily for it.
You know, Phil, sometimes I wonder why I put up with you. Why a star of my magnitude, a man of my dignity, a person who holds such a stellar place in society should condescend to continue such a lowly association.
Well, hoy, tea, toy. Hey, let me ask you something, Jackson. What have you got to be so stuck up about?
Well...
Show him your knees.
Never mind. Phil, the point I'm trying to make is that you're content to go along day after day in the same old rut. But not me. I'm progressing. In fact, right now I'm thinking of making a picture with Ronald Coleman. So, if
you
I
get... in a picture with Ronald Coleman? You better chalk up and shoot again, Dad.
What?
And keep one foot on the floor.
Well, I'm serious. What's so surprising about me and Ronald Coleman being in the same picture?
Yeah, what's so surprising about it? After all, Mr. Benny was the star of Random Harvest.
What?
He has it embroidered on his underwear.
Dennis, those aren't mine. Anyway, Phil, whether you believe it or not, I'm going over to Ronald Coleman's right now and see if... Come in! Oh, hello, Don.
Hello, Jack. Hi, fellas.
Hello, Don.
Say, Jack, I just dropped in for a minute. I want you to hear the number your sportsman quartet has prepared.
Don, can't we do it tomorrow? I got to run next door to see Ronald Coleman. He and I are going to make a picture together.
I don't think that last sentence got through the fat in my head. Would you mind repeating it?
Not at all. I said Ronald Coleman and I are going to make a picture.
No.
I can't get over all you guys. What's so amazing about me and Coleman being in a picture together?
Show him your knees.
Dennis! You stay out of it. Now, Don, I haven't got time to listen to the quartet. I'll see you tomorrow.
But, Jack, this number's so novel, I think you ought to hear it. It's a Western.
Don, I don't care if it's... A Western? Say, maybe that would fit in my picture. All right, Don, let's hear the number. Go ahead.
I'm an old cowhand from the Rio Grande. But my legs ain't bold and my cheeks ain't tan. I'm a cowboy who never saw a cow, never roped a steer, cause I don't know how. And the show ain't fixin' to start it now. Yippee-i-yo-ki-yay.
That's wonderful.
Yippee-i-yo-ki-yay.
That fit right in my picture.
Oh, Doctor. Carry me not from the lone prairie. Just give me a lucky strike.
L-S-M-F-T. For they are the first choice all over the range.
Great.
And all the cowboys say they'll never change. So smoke a lucky strike. That's the one you like. L-S-M-F-T. That's the one for me. Engine tried that big pow wow. Listen to
no,
the
great
hunting cow. Big chief F.B. boom say how.
No, no, Don, I don't want Indians in it. I just want a Western. No, Don, no Indians in the picture. It's just for a Western. No, look at Don, wait. Wait a minute, Don, I don't want it. Doc, how could you take up my valuable time with a thing like that?
But, Jack,
please,
it was...
I don't want to get mad. Now, look, I got some business talk over with Mr. Coleman. I want to be in a good mood. That Indian stuff. I'm going over to see him right now. Now, where's my picture script? Oh, here it is. Good evening, Sherwood.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Benny.
Is Mr. Coleman at home?
Yes, come in. May I take your hat, sir?
There you are.
Your coat?
Thank you.
Your apron?
What? Oh, my goodness, I forgot to take it off. Will you tell Mr. Coleman that I'm here?
Very well.
Oh, Mr. Coleman.
Yes, Sherbert?
Forgive me, sir. That Cottontail Benny is here.
No, send him away. Tell him we're not at home.
Well, wait a minute, darling. Maybe Jack's just trying to be neighborly. He probably wants to congratulate you on winning the Academy Award.
Well.
Yes, show Mr. Benny in, Sherwood.
Yes, ma'am.
I think it's rather sporting of him. After all, he must have been a bit hurt when we didn't go over and congratulate him on being the walking man. You know, for 8 long weeks, he just walked around in a circle.
Yeah, too bad he didn't straighten it out. He'd be in Chicago by now. Anyway, I still feel that this is a trick. He's over here to borrow something.
Oh, why do you always suspect that, Ronnie?
Well, he already has my electric shaver, portable radio, phonograph, bridge lamp, cocktail shaker, electric blanket, fountain pen, tuxedo, and Wednesday night was the last straw.
Why? What happened?
He told me he was going to the Palladium, his girlfriend had to work, and he wanted to borrow you.
Why didn't you tell me? I haven't done the shimmy in years.
Now, Benita.
Here he comes.
Hello, Benita. Hiya, Ronnie. Long time no see.
Oh, Jack.
You're right, Jack. I haven't seen you since the dinner party last Saturday night.
Yes. Wasn't that a wonderful dinner? Too bad you couldn't have been at my table.
Oh, that's all right, Jack. The man we had served beautifully.
Well, by the way, Ronnie, I didn't get a chance to talk to you Saturday night, so I just came over to congratulate you on winning the Academy Award.
Thank you, Jack. Good night.
Huh?
Oh, well, he just meant it was a good night to have won the award.
Oh, I see. Well, Ronnie, the real reason I came over here is to offer you a part in a movie that I'm going to make for Warner Brothers.
You're making a movie and you have a part for me?
That's right, and it's something you've never done before.
I'm sure.
You know, it's a western. It's a western, Ronnie, and you'll play a cowboy.
Me? A cowboy?
Yeah, I brought along the script so you could read a few lines, just to see how you like it.
Look, Jack, I have no intention
Ronnie, why don't you read it? It might be a grand opportunity.
Oh, well, all right.
Good. Now, Benita, will you do me a favor and read the feminine lead with Ronnie?
Oh, wait a minute, Jack. I mean, I don't
know. Now, Benita, why don't you read it? It may be a grand opportunity.
I will.
Good. Now start reading on page 3 where you two meet for the first time. Now go ahead, Ronnie. Remember, you're a cowboy.
Shucks, ma'am, I sure am. Plum sorry I killed that hombre. I reckon I didn't reckon he was your paw. I reckon.
Well, you sure plugged poor paw. But even though he's gone, I reckon he'll be happy to know you're apologizing for an honest mistake. I reckon.
A little more feeling, Benita, then.
Shucks, Missy, ma'am. I sure be like an ornery coyote for a shooting your kinfolk.
Bow your legs a little there, will you?
Yeah, poor sure looks strange lying there in the tumbleweed. Cold and dank.
Now, this is your big speech, Ronnie, so be very, very tender with it.
Wait a minute, little lady. Don't say dade. The cowboy's never dade. Just say he's traveled onward up to that big corral up yonder in the sky. For all you can hear is the harps of the angels and the singing of the sons of the pioneers. Oh, good heavens, what was that?
Me, I'm playing the part of your horse.
Oh, good. Is there a scene where you break your leg and I have to shoot you? I'm sorry, Jack, but this part isn't for me.
Well, okay, Ronnie. I was just trying to do you a favor, you know. It's your career. But when the picture comes out and it's a big hit, remember, I offered you the part before I took it to Gabby Hayes. Anyway, back to your decision. I'll be running along. Good night, Ronnie. Good night, Benita.
Good night.
Good night. Good night. Thanks. Nice of you to think of me.
Well, I always like to help. Hey, wait a minute. Ronnie, is that your Oscar on the table with the floodlights on it?
Yes.
Say, do you mind if I look at it?
Well,
gosh, it's really beautiful. You know, Rochester, my butler, has never seen an Oscar. Would it be all right if I borrowed it for a little while?
Well, Oh, all right, Jack. Go ahead and take it.
Gee, thanks.
Darling, why did you agree to let him take the Oscar home?
Might as well be with the rest of my things.
What did you say?
Nothing.
Oh. Well, Ronnie, it's awfully nice of you. Thanks a lot. I'll just wrap the Oscar in this copy of tonight's newspaper. I haven't read it yet. There we are. Well, good night.
Good night.
It was nice of him to let me take the Oscar so I could show it to Rochester. I must have stayed there longer than I thought. So dark out. No moon. Oh, well.
Hello, kitty. Hey, kitty, 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 kitty.
Darn it, she got away. She'd have made a wonderful A string.
Hey, Bud. Bud.
Huh?
Got a match?
Match? Yes, I have one right here.
Don't make a move. This is a stick-up.
What?
You heard me.
Mister, put down that gun.
Shut up. Now, come on. Your money or your life? Look, Bud. I said your money or your life. I'm thinking it over.
Now, mister.
Shut up and give me your wallet. And I'll take that package you're holding, too.
No, mister, don't take that package. It isn't mine. It belongs to Ronald Coleman.
Shut up.
But, mister, please.
Hey, this looks like gold. I'll melt it down.
But it isn't mine. I have to return it.
Pipe down. And lay down on the sidewalk, face down, and count to 100.
Look, mister, can't we...
Go on. Don't make a move or I'll let you have it.
Okay. Okay.
Down on your face and start counting.
Yes, sir. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Go away, kitty. 11, 12, 13, 14. Kitty, stop licking my face. I got enough trouble. 15, 16, 17, 18. Kitty, go away from here. 19, 20. What'll I tell Ronnie? 21, 22, 23, 24.
Jack will be back in just a minute, but first, here's Basil Rysdale.
Independent tobacco experts again name Lucky Strike first choice. Lucky Strike first choice over any other brand.
The famous Crosley poll has just completed an impartial survey in 11 southern tobacco states. This poll, taken among the tobacco experts themselves, reveals the smoking preference of the men who really know tobacco. Yes?
For their own personal smoking enjoyment, independent tobacco experts again name Lucky Strike first choice. Lucky Strike, first choice over any other brand.
These are the experts, auctioneers, buyers, and warehousemen. And we believe their overwhelming preference for Lucky Strike has a direct relationship to the quality tobacco we purchase for Lucky's.
You've heard the poll results. Now listen to what Mr. Herbert Highsmith, independent tobacco buyer from North Carolina, recently said.
Season after season, I've seen the makers of Lucky Strike buy quality tobacco. Smooth, ripe, and mild. I've smoked Lucky's 15 years.
So, for your own, real, deep-down smoking enjoyment, remember...
L-S-M-F-T! L-S-M-F-T!
Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw.
96, 97, 98, 99, 100. Help! Help! Police! Police!
Will Jack Benny recover the stolen Oscar? Will Ronald Coleman sue him? Will Bing Crosby be our guest next week? Tune in and find out!
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.